Hello and welcome to episode 202 of the Enough Podcast. My name is Mike Hurley. I am joined, as always, by Mr. Patrick Roan. Hi, Pat.
Hey, 202. Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot of talking.
Indeed.
I'm in a mood today.
Yeah?
Might be the heat. I'm crazy from the heat, as Diamond Dave would say. For you international and English listeners, that's a Van Halen reference. Not to be confused with their later iterations, Diamond Dave is David Lee Roth, the original lead singer, and in my mind, the star of Van Halen. But that's just me.
We do have music here.
Well, I'm aware that you have music, but I mean, you know. When we had the Van Halen going, you guys were like stuck in some music wasteland. Luckily, you came out of it somewhere around early 90s. But, you know, there was a period there between, I don't know, the late 70s and really the mid 80s where it was just – it was a dark time for you guys over there, man. I'm just saying. No, I'm kidding.
Is that just after we gave you arguably the best band of all time?
Zeppelin?
I was going to say the Beatles, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, take but your you pick. Gave us the Beatles. Just take then your you pick. Gave us Zeppelin. Then you
the Who.
You know, you gave us the Who, Pink Sabbath, Floyd. The Stones. I mean, you were just cranking out like the best rock and roll music on the planet, and then poof. Then you were giving us like Tull.
Yeah, but then, all right, we took a break for a while, and then we gave you bands like Oasis.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, early 90s.
And
come
now,
on, you came
again,
back.
Again in like the 2000s, potentially two of the biggest bands of recent times, Coldplay and Mumford & Sons.
Oh, how could you say that phrase without Radiohead being one of those two?
I'm not a big Radiohead fan, but yes, sure.
Michael, this is the reason why we can't talk about music on the show.
I am seeing Mumford & Sons again soon in the Olympic Stadium.
Oh, man, really?
Mm-hmm. Vampire Weekend is supporting.
Jeez, that's going to be a great show.
Mm-hmm. In the summer.
Oh, that's going to be great. Now, there's a lot of Mumford & Sons haters. Like they suffered like a backlash after their second album. Because everyone's like, oh, it's just the same stuff. It's your same shtick. Like, anyone could, like, all their songs sound the same and all
the
this
thing
stuff.
Is,
like, oh, come on.
People that say that, I mean, obviously they're never going to, but they need to see them perform the new stuff live because the
yes.
new stuff live has an incredible energy to it, which mm-hmm. the first album does not. And I
well,
loved the
second Well,
the
first
stuff
album. Live had an incredible energy about it.
But
that's
it
the
calm.
Thing. You have to see them live because yeah. they're an unbelievable live band.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, their stuff on album is okay, but it's nothing in comparison. Like, you want to know, like, the most regularly listened to Mumford & Sons thing in my house is neither of their albums. It's the... it's the simulcast of their First Avenue performance here that a friend of mine recorded and dropped on me. Wow. Just fantastic and blows away anything that they've recorded.
I had listened to that, which I also mm-hmm. happened to find that recording many,
right,
many times. Yeah, for a very long time, I listened to just that recording because
yeah.
it is really good. And they have some... They do have some live albums, so you should listen to
yeah.
those too. But you have to be there anyway.
Yeah.
So
we have a lot of ground to cover. We can't be talking about music. No one turns into. We need a music show. Come on, talk to Dan. We need a music show.
I mean, I wouldn't be the man for that. I really enjoy music, but I don't consider myself. An authority but, enough. And plus, music is one of those things, it's like religion and politics. You just shouldn't talk about it. Like, you know, on I think, yeah, last week's episode of The Pen Addict, we had an AMA. Me and Brad
yes.
did an AMA, which is incredible fun. And people asked,
people
asked our Desert Island Discs. And we both threw out a couple of bands. And all week, you know, me and him have been getting tweets about our music choices.
By the way, there's a really great show that you guys have over there on one of your four radio stations. And it's a podcast too called Desert Island Discs.
Yep.
And it's excellent. I've listened to a few of these and they're just wonderful.
Is that where the term Desert Island Discs come from? I think it comes from this show. Does it not? Like, this show has been around for decades.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think it probably does. I can't remember the name of it, but should link to it. I can dig up the link if you don't have it. Okay.
It's called Desert Island Discs. That's the name of the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So it'll be in the show notes.
But the one with George Michael, surprisingly good. The one with Annie Lennox, wonderful. There was another one that just kind of blew me away. But I mean, they don't have just like musicians doing this either. They got like Stephen Fry and, you know.
So a quick search on
Russell Brand and such.
Yeah, also lots of British folk really. A quick search on Wikipedia proves that the term actually did come from
that show.
It was first broadcast in 1942.
No, get out of here.
There you go.
Holy cow, man.
So that's what happens when you live in a country as old as mine. We have lots of history.
All right. So you're going to talk to Dan and me and Dave, Kalo. We're going to do a music show.
It would be just Van Halen all the time. That's what it would be.
And the problem with this is we'll get CJ on as a guest. Okay. CJ Chilvers.
I feel like I want to cut out that topic there.
No. Real quick. I can cover it in like 3 minutes. Are you ready?
Well, so, okay. Let me preface it then. So in September, I joined a new job, and a couple of days after joining the new job, spoke about how I had two monitors on my desk and how productive I felt with it, and I still do actually with the work that I do, which is I do a lot of copywriting. And dealing with multiple documents really is something that I do quite frequently, multiple spreadsheets that require copy and pasting between them, and having two monitors is a very useful thing for me. I don't have to flick backwards and forwards so often. So I think that having two monitors in my work environment is very, very useful. I don't really know if it would help me too much in my home environment. Like, I have two screens here. Actually, you know what? It does. I'm telling an actual lie right now, because I forget that my Mac Mini with the GarageBand recording is the second monitor. Because I look at that quite frequently to check that everything is tickety-boo. And on my MacBook Pro, which is in front of me, I put all the show notes together and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I use multiple monitors all the time now, and I find it to be much, much better in most instances.
And what I ended up telling you at the time, and I'm going to repeat here, and is how it ended up on our list of topics, was that there's actual research behind that, strangely enough, Microsoft's most valuable division, in my humble opinion, and not so humble opinion, is their research arm. Microsoft Research does an incredible amount of very fascinating and interesting work, and continues to do so. Right? I mean, the idea for Evernote, for instance, is born out of some of the research that Microsoft has long been doing at Microsoft Research with life logging. Same thing with Google Glass comes somewhat out of that research.
Didn't Evernote come from a product called OneNote? Is that right?
No.
Is that something else?
No. OneNote's something else.
So what Evernote was born out of a it does have lineage in Microsoft.
It has lineage in Microsoft Research, and I believe, if I remember the interview I heard with Phil Lieben, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, CEO of Evernote, was he mentioned some of the early you know, some of the early and ongoing projects that are going on at Microsoft Research with long-term memory, digital memory storage, and that there's a particular researcher who has been for years been working on this project where literally, you know, like Google Glasses, that's like old news to him. He's had something similar that's been capturing every conversation he has, recording everything he sees, the whole nine yards. Basically, the idea is a quantified self sort of project. In any case, I digress. None of this has to do with anything. Here's the deal. Microsoft did the preeminent research on multiple monitors and how it relates to productivity. I put a link to the first paper that was produced out of that in the show notes. And what they actually found is that there's a sweet spot for multiple monitors, and that's three. And it's three in a fairly specific configuration, or I should say fairly specific usage, with one being straight ahead of you, two angled off to the side at an angle, you know, facing you, kind of, you know, in that kind of wraparound sort of scenario, with the idea being that one screen is used for communications like email and things like that. That would be the screen to your left, I believe it is. The screen to your right would support research for what you're working on. That's like the browser, you know, with Wikipedia, whatever, open, you know, notes you might have, what have you. That would be on the right-hand screen. But the screen straight in front of you would be the actual thing that you're working on. And that having that actual thing that you're working on in front of you with easy ability to you know, kind of catch your, you know, refer to your notes and refer to your research and do your research and stuff like that to the right. I might be getting some of this wrong, so please read the paper. And to the left, you know, kind of out of the corner of your eye, be able to keep an eye on incoming communications, be able to react to anything urgent coming in, that in fact is the productivity sweet spot and can improve productivity by like something like 40% on average, like just like in a ridiculous amount. Right. You know, and so the reason I kind of put this out there is because I think that there are a lot of businesses out there. I hear people all the time having to fight to get a second monitor on their desk, you know, or, you know, oh, we just don't have the budget for it. We don't have the research for it. Right. Well, if you can bring a paper like that to your employer and shove it in their face and say, look, this will pay for itself in a matter of weeks. This is the reason why you should do it, because my productivity will increase by X percent, and here's the research behind it. You might have a better chance of getting that second monitor. As a matter of fact, that's kind of what I did at my former employer, who was doing that same thing with the, you know, multiple monitors. You give one to one person, they're all going to want it. Great, they're all going to want it, and it's going to make them all more productive. We should do that. You know, and you can kind of get past that fear and that argument. So there you go, Michael. That's how you get a third monitor on your desk. You show them that paper.
Yeah, I have a laptop and two screens, but they've for whatever reason, Windows 7 will not allow me to use all three of those displays.
Wow, really?
Just can't get it to work.
Just can't drive them, huh?
Yeah. And understand, ladies and jelly spoons, I can see perfectly how I would need to do it. It's not working. Understand that it might be some janky, like
Windows 7.
No. Like something that my IT administrator has done.
I gotcha. Okay. That said, I just want to mention real quick that this works no matter no matter what. So like as far as productivity is concerned, having the multiple screens, having the ability to You know, even just have your communications or your research off on another screen. For those of us like who have an 11-inch Air and maybe an iPad, there's programs out there. There's a few of them out there. Air Display, I believe, is one of them. But there's some others where it's a little app that you run on the iPad. You run this app on the desktop, and it can share your desktop screen over Wi-Fi. Now, some people say, "Well, it's a little bit laggy and stuff like that." This is not the sort of thing that you're going to want to set up anyway to like be actively working between the two screens. Boom, boom, boom. What you might want to do is say, have your Twitter or your IM or your email over off onto this second screen while you're using the first screen for actually getting stuff done. And that sort of idea of having this kind of peripheral, you know, alert system, as it were, off to the other side. So there you go. All of that information. Now I've just not only made you more productive, but made you cost your employer more, which actually is always a good thing.
So we're going to talk a little bit about app.net now.
Yeah, yeah.
So what app are you currently using? What is your app.net app of choice?
On the iPad and the iPhone, I'm using NetBot. And I actually, on my 11-inch MacBook Air, use Alpha. I use their web interface.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Why?
Why? Well, you know what I did last night? I happened to be on another computer and didn't have any Twitter client at all loaded on that computer, and I needed to peek in on Twitter about something. And so I actually logged on to the Twitter web interface. How does anyone put up with that?
It's pretty bad.
It is a jumbled, garbled mess, and every tweet is filled with like junk and like stuff that you don't need to know and promoted tweets. Oh, how do you put up with that? Oh my gosh. You know, and then it tells me what other friends these tweets have been like or that they like or I don't, this is no. But Alpha's not like that. Alpha's nice and clean and very easy to use, and I've just grown accustomed to it on the desktop. I know that there are now, you know, Mac applications out there, Kiwi, I believe, being the more popular of them. Tried them. It's all right.
Is it worth saying that Alpha is the name of the web client? Is that worth saying? I guess maybe some people.
Yeah,
don't know.
I think that's kind of what. At least that's the parlance I've seen it referred to by. I don't know other geeks who I always presume are smarter than me. So
that's what you're using.
I like it.
So go on. You were just going to say.
No, I was going to say. What about you?
I use an app called Robin.
Robin.
It's on Android.
Oh, that's right. You're on Android.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that.
I really like Robin. It's in active development. Like they're adding to it all the time. As a lot of Android apps are, I mean, people tend to push them out sooner. That's not a indictment on the app. It's a great app, but it's always changing. I really love the UI. They need to refine their stream marker support, which they, you know, I spoke to those guys and that's something that they're looking at. But it has one of the nicest UI elements I have seen in any application.
Hmm.
And I've tried to take a video of this a couple of times and have failed. So you know how a bunch of apps, they have like previews of images? Like, mm-hmm. So for example, like you're scrolling through and it will be like, you know, like post, post, post. And then there'll be like a... It'll be a post that has an image attached and there's like a blank space underneath where you can kind of see some of the image. It like preloads.
Yeah.
Does that make
Felix,
sense?
Felix for iOS.
Felix like does that. Do that. But what Robin does is as you are scrolling, it's like imagine that slot where the image was an actual hole in the timeline and the image was stuck behind it. So as you scroll down,
oh, interesting!
You see the image in full.
Oh, wow!
So you like scroll past the image. It's very impressive. Oh, that's very, very impressive.
Really interesting.
It's
and so then as you scroll past it and like you get all the way past it, it kind of then goes up with the, you know, with that tweet, like underneath that tweet, or
it's difficult. It doesn't disappear. All it does is as you move down, you've just seen the whole image. Like it's tough. It's tough to explain.
I need to see this. And they don't have like some sort of like, you know, preview video with some hipster and some indie rock plan to show off this feature. Because if not, they're doing it wrong. Apparently, that's what you have to do when you have any app.
Well, if they're on the iPhone, it's not so much the case on Android.
You mean on Android, they actually care about, I don't know, getting stuff done and not showing you pretty pictures of what you could possibly get done?
I try my best to stay out of all discussions in regards to Android because I have a show where I talk about that stuff and I don't want to be that guy. I'm going to do, I'm doing it right now. I'm going to attempt to take a video, which I will put in the show notes.
I would love to see this. It sounds fascinating, and just by your description, I understand why it's hard to describe.
So I'm going to try and take a video now, as we speak, so people that watch this can know that this video is being taken right now. So you'll have to excuse the way that it looks.
No problem.
Oh no! I took a photo.
So here's the deal. I tried a couple of other.
I have a couple of apps. Sorry, can I mention?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. So when I am using the iPhone, I use Repost, which is a very pretty app.
Yeah, like that one.
And I use Kiwi on the Mac.
Yeah. That's the other popular one. I tried Repost and I tried Felix just recently, like yesterday. And they both were deleted off of my phone in probably under 3 minutes.
Why?
Any app that I have to type more than a few words into has to support landscape. Absolutely has to. You know, as I've stated before, and as people know, I'm a prolific iPhone typer. And the way that I am prolific and able to type, you know, 1,000 words or so on my iPhone is in landscape, you know, either side using my thumbs. I can't do that as well or as comfortably in portrait mode. Therefore, in portrait, my only solution is to hold with one hand and kind of tap out with one finger. And that drives me nuts. It drives me nuts for more than a few words. And so, so the first thing I'm going to do, if you have an app that requires that I type into it at any point, is I'm going to open up the place that I type into, and I'm going to turn the phone to the side. And if your app doesn't allow me to type in like that, to type in landscape mode, it gets voted off the island. It really is that plain and simple. It has to be really compelling for me to use it otherwise. Now, there are a few apps on my phone that I occasionally have to type a few words into that don't fit that criteria. Path immediately coming to mind there. But even Path, I mean, that's the reason why I'm not typing, you know, 140 character posts in Path, right? I'm typing two or three words in to caption a picture, and that's about it, because there's no landscape mode. Really drives me nuts. And while I understand the constraints that a lot of developers are under, especially when you have something that requires a toolbar for certain actions. You know, like, what I mean is, if you have any of these AppNet or Twitter apps, you've got like, you know, the attach a photo button and the hashtag button and you know, you have this kind of strip of buttons you kind of have to include. It's kind of part of the experience. And I get that. And I understand that that really only ends up giving you about two lines of vertical space. Guess what? That's okay. That's okay for me. I need to type easily. I don't necessarily need to read it. I need to write it. And so, yeah, I downloaded them both, and I took a look, and I said, oh, this is kind of nice, and this is kind of different. And then I opened up a Compose, and I flipped it over, and nothing happened. Okay, I can't use this. Goodbye. Delete.
Okay, well, everybody has their little foibles.
Yeah, they're standards. You know, yeah. That's my standard. Yeah. I mean, you know, and... It's sad, right? Because I hear everyone raving about Riposte, especially, right? I said it right? Riposte?
I think so. I think it's like repost, like repost. Repost. As in like to repost. Or maybe it's like riposte, as in like
riposte.
Reacting to my riposte.
Yeah, see, I got that sense just because of the silent E at the end of it.
But yeah, it's very difficult.
Yeah, you know, these things should come with pronunciation guides. And I mean, I would love to give it a shot. I would love to try something out that's different for a while just to see. But I'm also disappointed with the shocking lack of iPad ADN clients.
Yeah, there just aren't. Like, you've got NetBot. And then, like, Zephyr, which I don't understand. And that's it.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who actually uses.
That's all you have. No more for you.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't get it.
So I have been able to take a video of that interaction, the UI thing. So that'll be in the show notes for people. And we're going to take a quick break now, and then on the other end of the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about app.net and sort of how we're both using it. So it's been a while. It's been a while, and you are prolific on the service, so I want to know why.
Yeah, I kind of am.
So let's just take a moment to thank our friends over at Squarespace.com who give you everything you need to make an amazing website. Squarespace provides you with a fully hosted, completely managed environment for creating and maintaining a beautiful website, blog, or portfolio. It doesn't matter how experienced you are when it comes to building websites, you can put something online in just minutes without having to worry about hosting, scaling, or integrating with social services like Twitter and Facebook. Squarespace have beautiful themes. They're really clean. They let your content do all of the talking, and they each font it. They each feature responsive web design, all of their fantastic templates. They have a drag and drop page building system called Layout Engine. Makes building pages on Squarespace really easy and really fun. Everything works just as you expect, like in an OS. It's all drag and drop, and you can just choose the types of content that you want and where you want to put them on your pages. It's very, very simple. They have very clean, very simple structure to their sites. Everything is built with SEO in mind, if that's your bag. They have image versioning as well, so your images will look great no matter what device they're on. They have statistics. Their real-time analytics are built right into Squarespace, so you can know who's coming to your site. You can even access these on the iOS and Android apps that they have too. 24/7 customer support. Squarespace Commerce, which allows you to sell things, digital, physical goods online, inventory management, order processing, and much, much more. I want you to go and find out more and try this out for yourself. Go to squarespace.com/70decibels at 70DECIBELS. Sign up for a free trial. Squarespace plans start at $10 a month for their standard plan, $20 a month for their unlimited plan. If you sign up for a year up front, you'll get 20% off this price, and you'll get 25% off if you sign up for 2 years up front. Don't forget to use the code 70decibels5, that's 70 decibels and then a number 5. You will not only get an additional 10% off your offer, off your first order, sorry, it will help support the show too. So go check out Squarespace, everything you need to make an amazing website. Been stumbling over my words a lot today. The news was difficult.
Yeah, I'll have to take a listen. Sorry to hear that.
It's okay. I mean, every day I do it now, and most days is absolutely fine. But today I was just a bit stumbly. I'll blame the writing of the stories I was reading.
It's all right. So app.net.
Let me ask you. You moved over to ADN very, very early on, and you actually left Twitter. You don't really seem very active on Twitter.
I'm not.
So what's the deal?
Because I'm really active over on ADN, and that's where I choose to be more active. Matt Gimmel had a very interesting piece a while back. Maybe it wasn't a while back. According to the URL structure, it was on April 5th, 2013. And we'll link to it in the show notes. But I think it mirrors a lot of my own thoughts on it, which is, number one, I find the quality of conversations to be of a higher level. I think that that is, or I should say, of a better quality. I think that is due in part to the people who are on the service and using the service. Number one. Number two, the fact that they have most have paid for said privilege. And number three, that 256 characters allows you to be quite a bit more expressive. You're not necessarily thinking about, okay, how can I get away with saying as little as I possibly can, or feeling the constraint of having to kind of edit out a larger thought or spread it out over two posts. You can generally get it all done in one. Certainly I think that it's still very kind of lots of early adopterish sort of folks, and certainly a lot of the a lot of the people that I was following on Twitter are now also on app.net, and a lot of the people I was having regular conversations with on Twitter are now on app.net. And while they may not necessarily be there actively or regularly, I know that they'll at least that every couple of days, like someone like yourself, logs in and sees what's gone on, and responds to things as needed. So then that's good enough for me. But yeah, I really enjoy it. I still kind of stand by my feelings about Twitter. While I, have come back kind of half-heartedly, I still see it as more of a promotional tool, and less of a conversation tool. At least it's not the place that I prefer to have the sorts of conversations that I reserve for app.net, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. My thoughts on app.net have kind of remained the same as they have for a while. And when was this? February. They were actually, my exact thoughts were summed up in a post on the app.net blog. They pulled a couple of posts that I'd put onto the service, along with some quotes from an episode of Bionic, in which I explained that I don't go on app.net and share my comments throughout the day, like my silly little jokes about Daft Punk songs and just little things like that. What I use app.net for mainly, I mean, I do some promotional stuff on there, like when we were selling the t-shirts, I put them on app.net. I do that primarily because there are some folks that wouldn't see them otherwise, and I feel it's unfair. And I've had people say to me, oh, you forgot to tell us about it, and I don't want to do that because that's not cool. But I don't cross-post. I always write two separate posts because I don't believe in cross-posting.
Me too.
But the main thing that I use it for is feedback on stuff, because the 256 character limit gives people a lot more space, and I think that allows people to open up a bit more and be more thoughtful. And I find if I want to get some feedback on something, and this is when I was brainstorming a new show idea, And also, that was one of them. And the other was I was getting some feedback from people about how they feel about pre-recorded and live read ads. And mm-hmm. I just wanted to get... I didn't actually post either of these things to Twitter, I don't think. They were just on app.net because I needed the space. And also, I figured I was going to be getting a lot more... a lot greater responses, in all honesty, than what I would get elsewhere because of that. Mm-hmm. And I was right, I feel. And that's what I tend to use the service for. I believe, for me, that it is a very valuable tool in getting feedback from people. And you know, getting... Like, Twitter is good for quick questions to be answered, in my opinion. And I can say, oh, what is that app that does X? I'm going to get that response on Twitter. But if I want people to give me their thoughts, then it's app.net where I go. And I check in every day. I read the timeline and I respond to things. But I typically don't have enough to say in the day that I would have timeline-y thoughts to post to two different places. And at the moment, Twitter is still the place that I want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that certainly it doesn't hurt their help. That app.net is built to be more than just a Twitter clone. Like, while certainly that's its kind of primary function right now, it is very clear from both Dalton and you know, all the developers working behind the scenes and the API and the kind of interesting things that people are beginning to do with it, that they want to be more than that, that they want to be a platform that people can build all sorts of things from, right? From, you know, kind of the private chat room functions of Patter, which is app.net-based service and app, where it's kind of like Glassboard, I guess, but using app.net as the back end. And I've seen several of the geeks mention that Sean Blanc especially talk about using it for kind of the same way that they use Glassboard back the last WWDC, that, you know, at this WWDC, they were planning on using Patter and seeing how Patter worked out for that. There's someone who just released, I think within the last 24, 48 hours or so, like a, you know, kind of file sharing service built on app.net using your storage. I would imagine it's the impression that kind of very first, like, back of the napkin takeaway I got from it was kind of like a send you it but using app.net, or maybe a Droplr but using app.net. Does that make sense?
I've seen a couple of those.
Yeah. And so you know, I like this idea that app.net is a platform for which you can build all of these things on top of, right? That it could be almost anything that involves kind of peer-to-peer or peer-to-global communication, right? I think that has some really interesting possibilities and really interesting places people could take that. And it's really interesting to see where that's going. And I also think, to their credit, it doesn't limit them into this box of, oh, it's just a Twitter clone for people who are rich or something, you know, whereas rich is defined as, you know, $3 a month or something, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I think they've done a pretty good job of shaking off that coat that everyone was trying to hang on them, as it were. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm still very active there. I continue to be active there. It's been phenomenally successful for me. And I feel like I've made a lot of new friends that I otherwise wouldn't have made necessarily on Twitter, and that I've gotten to know people quite a bit better than I had gotten to know them on Twitter. You know, and part of that is just following less people. But a big part of that is just people have more room to communicate and say what they want to say. So yeah, come join the party. See, this is the point at which we should have like some invitation code to give out or something. Why didn't we talk to them beforehand? We should have.
Yeah, you're right. We should have done that.
I'll see what we can do for next week. How about that?
Yeah, if you just PM Ben.
I know who to talk to.
You know,
but actually, it should come from you, being that you're the boss.
You know that I was the first person to do that.
Yeah.
And it went horribly wrong for everyone. It was terrible. It was just terrible. Because they gave the code thing to me like the day after. So when I posted that, you know, you can sign up for a couple of hundred free accounts or whatever. I posted it in the show notes, but then somebody pulled it out of the show notes and tweeted it. So then the link was showing up in Twitter searches that people were doing, and I was getting the worst accounts following me, and then like people signing up for multiple accounts. It was pretty terrible. But
Well, and I think they've ironed out the process quite a bit, and I know I gave some out recently on one of my sites, I can't even remember which, or something. I don't know. In any case, I gave some out. I'm sure that they would give us more. And we should probably line that up for next week. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, brother. Well, we should wrap this one up, eh?
I think so. So on app.net, Patrick is Patrick Rhone, PatrickRhone. Same on Twitter. I am iMike, IMYKE.
Same on Twitter.
Same on Twitter. and we'll be back next week for episode 203.
We will. And with that, we'll chat later.
We will. Cheers.
Cheers.